all goes well, this evening we're going to conclude this section from chapter 14 of Canto 10. There's four verses remaining. They're all clustered around the same topic. This mysterious topic of how the pastime of Krishna with the cowherd boys and the calves resumed. Remember I said some days ago, I'm anticipating our very clever audience to ask, hey, wait a minute, what happened with the calves and the cowherd boys were put in the cave? Did they just stay in the cave, or what happened? They didn't just stay in the cave. There's different versions expressed by the acharyas, but the one that gets the most votes or has most spoken about is the Brahma. One commentary says either Brahma or Krishna, but Krishna went to retrieve them and brought them back. But then there's another version that says they stayed there for one whole year. They didn't get hungry. You only little boys that don't get hungry? Didn't get hungry for a whole year. And the calves were grazing, and they just grazed for a whole year. They looked 1 year older after 1 year. And when Krishna was finished with Brahma, he went back and he found the calves and brought them back to the cowherd boys, and they were, there they were in the same position, exactly seated in the same position as they were 1 year before. And they didn't even realize that they'd been sitting there for a year, covered by Krishna's yogamaya potency. So that's interesting, isn't it? Let's go through the commentary. I believe we're starting with text 44. Is that right? Anybody remember? Look at your notes, text 44. Or 43. Begin with 43. Okay. Text 43, translation. O King, that's Shukadev speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. Although the boys had passed an entire year apart from the Lord of their very lives, they had been covered by Krishna's illusory potency and thus considered that year merely half a moment. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there's no BBT commentary. Vishwanath writes, four verses, so it starts with 43, four verses show how the power of Yogamaya allowed the cowherd boys to be unaware of the missing time of 1 year and complete their lunch pastimes with Krishna as previously. And the lunches didn't get stale either 1 year later. Without their prana devata, 1 year became like a moment as they were covered by Yogamaya. And he comments about his commentary. Usually in meeting Krishna, a long time seems very short. But in this case, separation from Krishna seemed very short because of Yogamaya. Jiva Goswami writes, the boys' ignorance of time was caused by Maya. That's Yoga Maya. They passed a year without the Lord of their lives. They were bewildered by Krishna's own Atma Maya. Though it was Brahma's Maya, it was permitted by Krishna and carried out by Brahma. Balaram thought, it can only be the Maya of my brother and nothing else that has fooled me. And that's a quote from chapter 13, text 37. Canto 10. It's repeated again. Balaram says that in chapter 13. Though it is impossible that Balaram could be bewildered by Krishna's Icha Shakti endowed with all powers, it is not impossible. Thus, Balaram was also subjected to Maya. Krishna was the Lord of their lives since he was the prince among the cowherds. The boys thought that only 5 moments went from half a moment to 5 moments had passed. In their perception, time had remained without passing of muhurtas. How long is a muhurta? Anybody know? 48 minutes. And we're going to find out what half of muhurta is in shortly. Time had remained without passing of muhurtas, days and seasons. I mean, that's a whole year. Shukadev calls out to the king in astonishment. Whoa. Sanatana Goswami writes, the boy's ignorance of time was caused by Maya. They passed a year in the absence of the Lord of their lives. They were bewildered by Krishna's own Atma Maya. Though it was Brahma's Maya, it was permitted by Krishna and carried out by Brahma. Same message. They were covered by Krishna's Maya. He was the Lord of their lives because he was Krishna, the young child of Nanda, and they were the boys of Raja. So that's the first of 4 verses. Then next is 44. Shukadev speaking. What indeed is not forgotten by those whose minds are bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency, by that power of Maya, the entire universe remains in perpetual bewilderment in this atmosphere of forgetfulness. No one can understand his own identity. Now that's the ordinary Maya. Purport. It is clearly stated here that the entire universe is bewildered. Thus even great demigods like Indra and Brahma are not exempt from the principle of forgetfulness, since Lord Krishna exercises internal illusory potency over his cowherd boyfriends and calves. It is not at all astonishing that for 1 year they could not remember their position. Indeed, the Lord's external illusory potency conditions souls to forget their existence not only for 1 year, but for many billions and billions of years as they transmigrate through the kingdom of ignorance, called the material world. There's all short commentaries. Vishwanath writes, because it also shows a similar quality of deluding, Yoga Maya is compared with the potency of material Maya. Maya makes the jiva forget his identity. Just as Mahamaya keeps the jiva in forgetfulness of his self, Yoga Maya made the coward boys forget separation from Krishna, which lasted for a year. Jiva Goswami writes, an example is given. Who, bewildered by Maya, does not forget in this world? Everyone perpetually forgets in deep sleep, or even with knowledge of scriptures. Everyone forgets that they are different from the gross and subtle bodies. This is the power of Maya. Because Krishna's Icha Shakti is so powerful, it can bewilder even his own associates. And Sanatan Goswami writes, same theme, in this world, the Lord who spreads everywhere is forgotten. All, even Indra, are bewildered because there is constant forgetfulness of what is remembered or recalled. This is the power of Maya. And Jiva Goswami writes, what is not forgotten by those whose minds are bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency, by that power of Maya, the entire universe remains in perpetual bewilderment. And in this atmosphere of forgetfulness, no one can understand his own identity. You're very familiar with the relationship between Yogamaya and Atmamaya, Yogamaya and Mahamaya, right?
I haven't asked a question.
Do you understand now?
Yeah.
You understand. You're clear. Prabhupada used it's really simple. It uses the example of electricity. It's one energy. And electricity can be used to make things hot or make things cold, but it's one energy. The electrician knows how to do both. I mean, you know, heating and AC, trucks drive around, and so it's electricity. So similarly, it's Krishna's potency can act this way or that way. And whether it acts this way or that way, his Yogamaya or Mahamaya, because Mahamaya is a reflection of Yogamaya. So the reflection of an object is nothing but connected to the object. So Mahamaya deludes the conditioned soul from remembering Krishna. The Yogamaya potency deludes the devotee from remembering Krishna. But there's the intimacy of connection and then the sense of disconnection with Mahamaya. Take your pick. And it all is based upon your regard for Krishna. So it's not just, I think I like that Maya instead of the other one. It's your relationship with Krishna. It'll determine one or the other one. Okay, now we're ready for the third of the verses, text 45. The cowherd boyfriends said to Lord Krishna, you have returned so quickly. We have not even one morsel in your absence. Please come here and take your meal without distraction. Purport. The word svagatam te ti ramhasa indicate that the cowherd boys were congratulating Lord Krishna for having brought back the calf so quickly from the forest. Now, Lord Krishna's beloved friends urged him to sit down properly and eat to his full satisfaction. According to Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, the cowherd boyfriends felt quite jubilant and were eager to eat with their dear friend Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti writes, the cowherd boy spoke to Krishna, who had very quickly returned with happiness. We thought you would take at least one ghatika. One ghatika is a half of a muhurta, 24 minutes. Two ghatikas equals one muhurta. We thought you'd back in 24 minutes to bring the calves back from so far away, but you have brought them back in an instant. Without you, we have not eaten a morsel. Therefore, please come here. Jiva Goswami writes, you have come nicely bringing all the calves. Though a year had passed, they remained with the food in their hands, and it didn't get stale. By the power of Krishna's Ichha Shakti, you have not eaten a parcel of food. You're holding the same food in your hand as before. Enter here among us, looking for the calves and bringing them together. Give up anxiety, which arose from that venture, and eat heartily. And then from Kramasandarbha, Jiva Goswami writes, the cowherd boyfriend said to Krishna, you have returned so quickly, we have not even one morsel in your absence. Please come here and take your meal to full satisfaction. Brahma took all the boys and calves to another place. That's making reference to chapter 13. Krishna brought them back in an instant. But they were unaware of this. Got it? This is understood from their speech. All doubts were removed by Maya. The same Maya was the Lord's personal servant, which deluded Brahma, and was arranged by the Lord. Balaram said, this must be the Maya of my brother. Again, that's chapter 13. And the last of the four verses, text 46. Then Lord Rishikesha, smiling, finished his lunch in the company of his cowherd friends. While they were returning from the forest to their homes in Braja, Lord Krishna showed the cowherd boys the skin of the dead serpent Agasura. Now, remember, they're herding calves, not cows yet. There's this really lovely description that when Krishna was three, he wanted to herd the cows. You know that story? Think of somebody that's 3 years old, and Krishna told Mother Yashoda when he was 3 years old, I want to go herd the cows. And she said, you're so small. You know how big the cows are. You can have to grow up a little bit before you can herd the cows. She was happy because, you know, taking up the family occupation and everything. But he's so small, 3 years old, big cows. So he went to Nanda Maharaj and told Nanda Maharaj, I want to herd the cows. Nanda Maharaj smiled and said, you can herd the calves. And so there's a big festival. This is, I think, is in Gopalchampu. The big festival was the little boy Krishna is going to take up the family occupation, and so they had a big festival. And everybody came and gave Krishna gifts and describes the gifts. You know, he gave him his first flute and his first buffalo horn, his first this and that. And Mother Yashoda gave Krishna some shoes. You know the story? You know, the long pointy shoes that curl up? Now they put mylar on the side, but then it had like mirrors on the side of the shoes. And she wanted Krishna to wear them. And Krishna said, I won't wear these shoes. I won't wear shoes unless you provide every one of Nanda Maharaj's calves with shoes, four per calf. And Mother Yashoda said, but nature has already arranged that they have shoes. Haven't you seen? They have shoes already. They don't need shoes. And he said, and not only that, you want me to take an umbrella? You have to have an umbrella for all the calves. Each one of the calves, otherwise no umbrella. Doesn't say what happened after that. But he was 3 years old when he started taking care of the calves. So this is, he's still young. It's still with the calves, whatever they, I think he changed from the calves to cows when he was five or six. So he's still a young boy. And, so part of the arrangement with that Nanda Maharaj made was you have to come back for lunch. So here they're having lunch, but as soon as lunch is over, they're going back because later when they're herding the cows, they stay out the whole day until the evening. But here they came, they're coming back. And they saw the dead skin of the serpent Agasura, heading for the village in Vraja. Vishwanath writes, smiling to show his bliss, Krishna ate with the boys. Even though a year had passed, the food did not show any lack of taste. There it is. Oh, friends, look at the skin of this dead snake. In order that the boys would spread the news of the killing of Agasura, Yogamaya kept the snake there for a year under her influence. Giving up the forest pastimes, he returned home. So this was, it was one of the things that the cowherd boys would do, is when they got back home, their mother and father would say, what did Krishna do today? And they'd always have a story to tell. Oh, how wonderful is Krishna. Lord Narayan is protecting him. Nanda is so pious, the piety of Nanda Maharaj is protecting Krishna. So Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna smiled because the boys, who had been bewildered, became joyful on hearing his words, which did not make mention of anything to cause them suffering. Krishna is called the Lord of the senses to show that he was dear to all of them. He showed them the skin, so that they would talk about it in Braja. The Lord kept the skin covered by Maya for a whole year. Now, a dead snake sitting around for a year is going to not smell good and look good, but this one was okay. Sanatan Goswami. Krishna smiled because the boys who had been bewildered became joyful in hearing his words, which did not make mention of anything to cause them suffering. He dined with the boys. Without them, he did not eat for all that time. How would Yashoda tolerate this? Krishna was the power behind all senses, Rishikesha. That's how he's being addressed in the verse. They became satisfied because of his skill at imitating eating. Another famous example is Lakshmana with Ram. Though he was not inclined to eat, he did so to satisfy the boys. He ate with great satisfaction while accepting things with different tastes and aromas by instigating his own sense of taste, etc. Then he returned to Braja. He showed the boys the skin of Agasura. This created memory so they could tell the killing of Agha in Braja. You know, as if it happened the same day, although it was 1 year earlier. Very clever, huh? The skin remained covered by Maya at all this time by the Lord. And last is Jiva Goswami saying in short, then Krishna smiling finished his lunch in the company with his friends, showing them the skin of Agasura. He returned from the forest to Braja. And that's the end of the section. The next verse is describing Krishna's form and the decorations on his body, and it's very nice. Forest minerals, bamboo flute, etc., etc. He entered the cow pasture, saw Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj, just seeing the sight of Krishna, was so happy. And so the lila changes and the mood changes. The pastimes keep flowing. Is anybody here aware of this other famous pastime between Lakshman and Ram, where there is some imitating of eating? Anyone familiar?
Did not see. He neither slept nor took any prasad.
Wow. I'm going to have to check with our Ramayana scholars and see what they can say about that one. Well, it works out really well because Krishna has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. That means he can, when there's discrepancies, no problem because he can adjust everything according to his will. And we've spoken about this. To worldly people, that sounds like a whitewash. Or, you know, you silly people. But Krishna has his purposes. He's not, we're silly people. Krishna has his purposes. And he can make everything happen according to his will because he's all powerful. He doesn't need our endorsement to do what he does. Or the way that he does what he does. And to think that way is, it's demeaning, or the Prabhupada, in this, it's Hare Krishna movie, they've got a lot of things in that movie. So one of his statements is thinking that bringing Krishna down to our level, making him one of us. He's not one of us. He has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. And so the comparison is made, something that's within our experience to something that's outside of our experience. Something that's within our experience is forgetfulness of who we are. And not for, you know, 1 year. And then we wake up and say, oh, now I remember who I am. But Maya covers a living entity, the conditioned soul, perpetually. And so we're living a dream. Then comes all this other discussion that comes from his prayers, and also it's in Queen Kunti's prayers. You know, what's real and what's illusion? What is Maya anyway? What's illusion? Does illusion exist or not exist? What does it mean, illusion? Like a mirage in a desert. Well, there isn't water in a desert. So illusion is illusion. Or a rope, if you think it's a snake, then you have certain feelings about what it isn't. But it's a rope. So it's something, but it's not what it appears to be. That's what illusion means. It's something, but it's not what it appears to be. And then you relate with it as if it is what it appears to be. So it's not that, you know, the pillar in the middle of the floor here doesn't exist. You know, if it didn't exist, the floor upstairs would crash on her head, or at least my head. So it exists, but it's temporary. It's not what it appears to be. It appears to be permanent, and so forth. Even we relate to some, in some degrees, to its impermanence. But it's, and so, that illusory potency specifically, it covers the living entity and their awareness of who they are, of all that is spiritual, it can't be perceived by the Mahamaya potency. And then there's modes of nature for that Mahamaya potency in passion, ignorance, and goodness when seized differently. But it's, in all cases, it's covering knowledge of what's real. And we accept that what's not real is real. That kind of illusion. And then the Yogamaya potency covers living entities so they can't see Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They see him in a different way. Our dear friend or our lover or our son or whatever. And so it causes similarly forgetfulness of what happened. Like we don't, you know, like we have forgetfulness of who we are. They may have forgetfulness of what they've understood, what they've experienced, the passage of time. Prabhupada made a statement, one of my godbrothers reminded me of this statement. Prabhupada said, one of the signs of badness is you don't even know what day it is. Now sometimes we get, you know, so busy, I get so busy, I lose track of what day of the week it is and what day of the month it is, and I may know what time of the day it is, but I don't know what day of the week it is. And what Prabhupada's statement is, it's a form of madness. So here they have this, it's a form of madness, but it's glorious. A whole year passed, they didn't even know that a whole year passed. The food that's in their hand doesn't get stale or sour or smelly. It's like it was before, fragrant, and the skin of the Yagasura demon like it happened that morning. So they could see it, oh, go tell everybody in Braj about this. So these defy material laws. And it sounds like a fairy tale or mythology. But our understanding is it's Krishna's inconceivable potencies for his own purposes. It's not imagination. It's not that kind of maya. It's covering of the living entities' remembrance of who they are, Mahamaya or Yogamaya. They forget whatever Krishna wants them to forget, and they remember whatever Krishna wants them to remember. What's the Bhagavad Gita verse that says that? Yeah. 15:15. You know that verse? No? Sarvashachaham riddhi sannivishto matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. Remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness comes from Krishna, situated within the heart. So in this case, Krishna's not exactly in the heart. He's right in front of them, and by his same influence, they can remember, they can forget anything. Same principle, only as Yogamaya, as the agent of Krishna's having them remember or forget. When you asked your question about Yogamaya, Mahamaya, you know, another verse from Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrata. You know the verse? You familiar? Okay, you've heard it though, right? So, Na Aham Prakash. Krishna isn't manifest before those who are inimical towards him. Yogamaya Samavrata. He's covered by his Yogamaya potency. So I, you know, as a young brahmachari, always used to wonder, why is Krishna using this term Yogamaya? Because I always related Yogamaya to what, you know, that goes to the devotees. Yogamaya is what is interacting with, the devotees are interacting with. So it shouldn't it have been Mahamaya. Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Mahamaya Samavrata. And here's the answer. It's related to your question, how the Yogamaya Mahamaya related. Mahamaya is expansion of Yogamaya. It's the reflection expansion, perverted reflection expansion. It rests upon Yogamaya, Mahamaya. Like when the seventh child of Devaki was within the womb of Devaki, Krishna summoned Yogamaya and said, I have some service for you. She said, great. What's the service? You have three services. One, transfer the seventh child of Devaki from her womb to the womb of Rohini. Don't worry. He's very heavy, but you can do it. I'll give you the strength to do it. Two, you take birth in the womb of Yashoda. And then three, I'm going to take birth over here as the eighth child of Devaki. And after I'm born, Vasudev's going to take me and place me by the side of Yashoda, and he'll bring you from the side of Yashoda back to Mathura, and Kamsa is going to try to kill you. That's not a nice service. He said, don't worry, because you're my potency, he can't kill you. And when he fails to kill you, the next service, you go throughout the land and you'll be known by Durga and various names of the external potency. He's speaking to Mahamaya, to Yogamaya. Then you have this other service. That's for the worldly people. Same energy. Electricity that does the heating and cooling. The Yogamaya that does this with the devotees and does that with the non-devotees. Well, one energy, internal, and the reflection or expansion potency of the internal. Here's another example. During the period of cosmic annihilation, what happens to all the living entities? They're withdrawn within the body of Mahavishnu, and they're in a deep sleep state, susupti. So, according to the third canto Bhagavatam, two things happen. The personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, or Karna Dakshai Vishnu, he sees off in the distance Pradhan, the undifferentiated totality of material energy, which is a reflection of his internal potency, Rama. She, Pradhan, or Chaya Devi, is just a reflection of Rama. And Vishnu considers, she wants to do some service, but she doesn't have any service. It'd be nice if she had some service she could do. He just has a desire like that, and Rama makes the arrangement for her to have some service to do. So she's considered like a maid servant of Rama. She's just the reflection of Rama, expansion reflection of Rama, the internal potency. That's what the external potency is. That's the relationship. Very amazing pastime. All religions, all religious theologies, monotheism teaches there is God. He's the source of everything. But the understanding of the form of that source, these loving exchanges with that source, his unlimited potencies and how they work, it's a very elevated subject matter that we're being, it's just being handed to us. By the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates and the line of disciplic succession. And here we are receiving this most elevated subject matter. Gosh. Filled with spiritual potencies just to hear. Or just reading something. And I didn't know where I read it, but Rupa Goswami was referring to, the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam as a certain aspect of saying it's Krishna's self-same form. There's a really nice Sanskrit phrase which I can't remember right now. I should have noted it, and I don't know if I went to look for it, if I could find it again. But what we're experiencing Krishna just by hearing this subject matter. I mean, what do we know? When we're chanting, we're here experiencing Krishna also. And seeing the deity form, we're experiencing Krishna also. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is very relishable form of Krishna in the form of sound. And so variegated and so amazing and mystical, and how it acts upon us is also mystical. Wonderful. It's amazing literature. Once having a taste for Srimad Bhagavatam, who has an interest for other things? One devotee was sharing this with me. She came to the West for studies, met devotees, became initiated, got married, and she then was, her mother was a very pious lady, more than pious. She was, in her own mother tongue, she was regularly, for years, for hours every day, reading Bhagavatam without purports, just in her mother tongue, just the verses. Then when her daughter became a devotee, her daughter gave her a gift of Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam in her mother tongue. And when visiting her mother one time, she saw her mother reading this Prabhupada's Bhagavatam every day, and her mother commented, "For the first time, I've been reading Bhagavad Gita for umpteen years, Srimad Bhagavatam, but I never understood it. And now, with the grace of these explanations, the commentary, I can understand it." You know, her devotion wasn't lacking before, but just didn't have that connection with disciplic succession explanations. And somehow by Bandhu Swami's kindness, we have access to commentators, acharyas, the explanations also. I mean, he hasn't done Sridhar Swami's translation. That would be nice to have. But, it's an ocean of sound vibration. So let's see if there's some discussion. Anyone in the room here have a topic you'd like to discuss? Yes, there's one over there. There's a question over there. It's because these will start to come in. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, we used two terms, Krishna's Maya and Brahma's Maya. What is the difference between the two?
What is it related to?
What is the difference between the two?
Well, the Brahma's Maya is limited and Krishna's Maya is unlimited. Brahma has certain potencies. So one of those potencies was, it was described, when he put them in the cave, he put them to sleep, covered by his Maya potency. But it's limited. And then we heard specifically, it was Brahma's Maya, but Krishna sanctioned it, so in effect it's like, he's authorized to do what he did. Krishna empowered him to do what he did. So it's ultimately Krishna's potency. Like his creative potency. Similar, you know, Srishti Shakti, the creative potency. It's Krishna's potency that he's gifted with. And you know, any one of us, potency to do anything.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, you are saying that when we chant or when we hear Bhagavatam, we can experience Krishna. You were just mentioning.
We're in contact with him.
In contact with him. I wanted to know, Guru Maharaj, like how it feels to experience Krishna, like if we have...
You're going to have to wait. Purification, please. You know, what it feels like, you read these narrations and you get a sense of what it feels like. But, you know, that's notional. It's not direct personal. So through purification, then it becomes direct personal. That's what it feels like. Go ahead.
Question from Ramasharna Prabhu. With reference to Bhagavad Gita 15:15, is it right to say that at the time of death, remembering Krishna is Yoga Maya and forgetting Krishna is Mahamaya?
Well, what happens when the cowherd boys didn't know what happened for a whole year? Is that Yoga Maya or Mahamaya? Yeah. So, you know, depends on if you're a devotee or not. The answer to the question is depend if you're a devotee or not. When Kamsa was thinking of Krishna when he was killed, is that Yoga Maya or Mahamaya?
Question from Amal. Prabhu, could you please comment on Subhadra's position? Was she Yogamaya or Mahamaya or neither?
Yogamaya. Internal potency. Internal potency, not exactly Yogamaya, but internal potency.
Question from Sridevi Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I was wondering today, why Mother Yashoda got to have the childhood pastimes of Krishna and not Mother Devaki? Although Mother Devaki did penances. Thank you.
Once in a day of Brahma, it's Yashoda, and the other 999, it's Devaki. Because only once in a day of Brahma does Krishna perform pastimes in Braja. That's the answer.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, when the gopas were under Krishna's Maya, did their devotional service continue or was it paused?
Gosh. Why are you asking that question? Next question.
No more questions. That's it.
Okay.
Yes. One question from Atulya Mataji. Maharaj, surely it is wonderful to read all purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, what would be your comment if we were to read only translations, especially with the children who may not have attention span to read the purports, and as they grow up, go more in depth study?
Great.
Question from Radhika Priya.
And even, you know, depending upon the age of the child, just even, you know, Prabhupada's Krishna book, just, you know, simplified language of Krishna's pastime for children. So, corresponding with the language capacity of the child and the attention span of the child and everything, you know, narrating accordingly. So this effort is not, it's for a special audience, let's say that. Not for the general audience, and it's not for kids. We have, you know, having a similar discussion that the, for example, there's a plan, if it happens, we'll see, to have a second youth retreat. We had one at the J. Ram's home. You know, from the Midwest, kids came from all over the place, actually, from Seattle and Houston and all over. So this year, the theme is going to be Krishna's killing of demons in Vrindavan and how it helps us in chanting japa. And it's going to be for kids. Not going to do the same thing for the kids that we're doing here. So different audience, her point is, my response of great, you know, different audiences, they need to hear according to their capacity to hear. The speaker needs to know the audience and calibrate according to the audience. That was the short, great response.
Question from Radhika Priya. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, if knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness come from Krishna, then why he gives more importance to remembering about him rather than forgetfulness and envious quality?
Rather than what?
Rather than forgetfulness and envious quality towards him. I think it is what I understood is, if knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness come from Krishna, then why he gives more importance to not remembering him rather than forgetfulness and envious quality towards him?
There's a few of us in the room that are puzzled. And I'm one of them. So, why is he saying it non-forgetfulness instead of remembrance? Is that what she's saying?
What I understood, Guru Maharaj, is if Krishna is giving the remembrance, why does he not give the remembrance about him more, you know, to everyone? Instead, he is giving...
Because people want to forget. Okay, you want to forget. So be it. Yeah.
There is a question from the previous session. Is that okay?
Yeah.
This is the how to improve our sadhana. You have mentioned about the importance of goals.
Goals.
Please help with the goal setting for Bhakti Vriksha members. What would be the ideal goal for the new devotees who start to come for Bhakti Vriksha?
Well, it depends on the individual. Goals are not assigned. Goals come from within. It's personal. That the best goal is something that's personal, not something that's assigned. Now, a general direction of a goal is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, and so forth. Be in the mood of humble service, or, you know, some general standards, but, you know, subjectively, goals are what's meaningful to you, what you think is doable for you. That's a suitable goal for a Bhakti Riksha member. And you can take guidance from your Bhakti Riksha leader, and they're just going to hold up a mirror and say, you know, what do you see? They're not going to assign a goal to you, most likely. They may give, you know, some hints or some options for you to select from, a nice menu, and you say, I like that one. Okay, great. That's a nice goal.
It's, can I say it's, principles are given, and then, the leader inspires them to take,
yeah,
choose the goals from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's principles or guidelines, you know, directional. Statements. Now, some people want to be just told. And, you know, I struggle with that one. I struggle with it because, you know, then, you know, they become dependent on being told, and supposing you're not around to tell, then, you know, they're in nowhere's land because no one is telling them, or the person that they're wanting to tell them isn't there to tell them. So, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, a training and education model, or a parenting model, or, you know, guiding model. The model I prefer is helping people learn how to make wise decisions rather than telling them, decide this. Because then when you're not around, they know how to make wise decisions. I mean, guidance, yes, but not making the decisions. In some cases, I personally make exceptions and say, you know, do this or do that. Anyway, that's me, and some people don't like that. Give me some service. Which one's your favorite? There's a million of them. Just like this little girl. She's like really happy doing something over there. Totally occupied. And did your mother tell you to do that? No. Just like you got inspired and you did it, right? Good. Yay.
Question from Sanchari Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Could you do me a favor?
Yes.
Leave off the Hare Krishna Maharaj at the beginning.
What books or sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam would you recommend reading to understand the characteristics, qualities that develop as one progresses in spiritual life? To understand what each stage look like?
Well, Bhagavatam isn't compartmentalized like that. Rupa Goswami, on the other hand, has taken Nana Shastra Vacharyanaika Nipunosa Dharma Samsthapako. He's taken the scriptures and extracted principles and laid them down sequential chronologically. But it's not like read a section of the Bhagavatam and you'll get that chronological, sequential, compartmentalized picture. That's not how the Bhagavatam is composed. So if you want that kind of literature, you go to the Rupa Goswami, or you go to Jiva Goswami. He's done that in the Sandarbhas, like, you know, Bhakti Sandarbha. And it's translated, Bhakti Sandarbha is translated by Bhanu Swami into English with Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary, so that's a place you can go. But, you know, start with Prabhupada's writings, Nectar of Devotion. That's it. How many questions do you have this evening? Only two. Okay.
So Maharaj, one is related to the topic and one is a little bit off topic. So related to topic is what can we do from our side to increase our remembrance of Krishna throughout the day? I mean, I can remember devotees, guru, but Krishna's remembrance because they are living and they are around me, but it comes when it comes. Krishna's remembrance.
Well, two things. Remembrance is a result of attachment. You're not going to remember Krishna throughout the day unless there's attachment to Krishna. You're going to remember the things you're attached to throughout the day. So the stage of becoming more remembering Krishna is purification, and the stage of attachment, then it's regular remembrance, unbroken remembrance. And a second point is thinking of guru implicit, implied, or packed within thinking of guru as thinking of Krishna. They're not separate. Can you think of Krishna apart from guru? Can you think of guru apart from Krishna? So thought, remembrance of guru throughout the day, who is behind guru? And if I'm not seeing who is behind guru, then am I really seeing guru or thinking of guru?
So the second question is, I was thoughtful, Maharaj, when you mentioned that sometimes my inquiries are collecting more information. So I was thinking that what should be the impetus of inquiring to Guru, and I have heard that it could be service to Guru and to service to devotees. Sometimes devotees appreciate, oh, you ask questions, they help us. So am I getting like puffed up about it, or what is my consciousness? What is my impetus to ask the question? I feel that in every class there is something that relates.
Oh yeah, I felt badly when I heard the second part of your two-part question, and I was responding to the first part without hearing the second part, because it was application oriented.
But I feel sometimes myself also, Maharaj, that is it too much? Like every class you are asking a question, is it impetus?
No, it's good.
Yeah.
We've been over this. I don't mind going over it again. And again and again. Inquisitive spirit is good. Your inquisitive spirit is good. Another way that Prabhupada would say is it's a sign that someone is heard, that they have questions. Because of inquisitive spirit, I'd like to get a clear understanding of this. I think Arjuna. It's not speculative. It's not information oriented. It's just he wants to understand. So that's good. So don't try to shut that valve off, the inquisitive spirit valve. It's good. And the mood of it is, you know, I want to understand, and specifically, I want to understand who I am. I want to understand, you know, the spiritual dimension of reality. Many of your questions, if not most of your questions, are in fact application improvement oriented. And I can rely on you to ask a question just like this at the end. How many questions you have this evening? So it's good. It's not teasing. It's appreciation. So it's good. It's a good quality. And because of that inquisitive spirit, you'll understand more than if you didn't have an inquisitive spirit. And then with that inquisitive spirit, when you hear, it's going to go in more than if you didn't have an inquisitive spirit and just heard. it'll help you progress in spiritual life. It's good. Brahma Jigyasa. Just, you know, so if there's any modification or refinement or something, check yourself and you'll, whatever method you want to do this, to what degree is this going to help me make spiritual progress and understand, uncover more my true identity and instead of information based. And you know, curiosity can just be information based. Okay. I mean, for example, in the course of my travels, I meet people that want to know, you know, do you mind if I ask you what are some of your core beliefs or convictions or your teachings? They don't really want to know. It's just curiosity, and then it goes on to something else and on to something else. Yeah. They don't really. It's just information. Mm. Oh, okay. And, you know, the next thing. I mean, that's not detrimental, but it's not going to carry them very far. And so, for yourself, this is the advice. It is application, self-improvement oriented. Your questions generally are like that. Okay?
Just a little, I feel that it is, I strongly believe that it is a very strong medium for me to connect with the guru as well as my mentor, as well as other devotees. So is it a proper understanding?
Yes. You got the right understanding.
That's
okay.
Thank you.
More questions. I knew that would happen. And I'm going to ask this. You get ready for the question I'm going to ask you. The question I'm going to ask you is, we've been hearing this whole story of Lord Brahma. So this whole story of Lord Brahma, what stands out the most for you in hearing all this about Brahma and what happened the last two chapters, okay? Go ahead.
At night of Brahma, does he take rest within the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu?
Amazing that someone's asking that question, because that Canto 1, Chapter 6, verse number something or other, it says that he takes rest in the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. So I just sent out to 6 different learned devotees, and only one has answered so far. And it's Bhanu Swami saying yes. Because the uncertainty that I had was, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita it says, during the night of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation. And the partial annihilation starts with a long period of drought and then fire. And it gets so hot, and then flood. Drought, fire, flood. When it gets really hot, Maharloka, Janaloka, they get in their vimanas and go to Tapaloka. And stay there, my understanding is they stay there for the duration until the next day of Brahma, and he starts to build up, you know, the part that their part doesn't get annihilated, it just gets too hot. Now, Bhanu Swami wrote back and said, it's his understanding that they go there because it gets hot, but they also enter into the body of everyone. All living entities within the universe enter into the body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. In Brahma's case, it's in a mystic slumber. Something like what Mahavishnu does, but obviously not the same. Because he's in Yoga Nidra, but some mystic slumber, some mystic situation, because it's night. And the whole universe is dark. That's what he wrote. The whole universe is dark, which means what happens to the sun during the night of Brahma? Anyway. To the best of my understanding, the answer to the question is yes.
So that was a question from Lingaraju Prabhu.
From Lingaraju.
Yes.
Okay.
Shashi Mukhi Mataji's question, what is the difference between Janasangha and Sangatyaga?
Oh gosh, this is a Nectar of Instruction class. Ask your Nectar of Instruction teacher. They're very similar, just worded differently. The emphasis for both of them is stay away from unwholesome association. It's like what's stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One of the characteristics of a Vaishnav is one who gives up unwholesome association. And unwholesome association means intimate association. Not like don't go to the workplace because there's a mean guy at the workplace. But, you know, association in the meaning of what association is, Sangha. Go ahead.
Question from Shashireka Mataji. Everyone has constitutional position in spiritual world. That means one gets liberation according to their constitutional position, or one gets devotional power according to their constitutional position so they can go to their assigned destination.
That's a statement, not a question.
So there are two things, Guru Maharaj, which is, it means one gets liberation according to their constitutional position, or is it like one gets devotional power according to the constitutional position so they can go to their assigned destination? So that's what I'm reading.
You can't go anywhere without power. I can't walk across the room without power. So I don't see there's a contradiction. Okay. By the way, Lingaraju, you can look, the reference is 1630, where it reads, this is purport, the duration of a day in the life of Brahma is 4,320,000,000 solar years. This is stated also in Bhagavad Gita. So for the period of Brahmaji, for this period, Brahmaji rests in yoga nidra within the body of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, the generator of Brahma. Thus, after the sleeping period of Brahma, when there is again creation by the will of the Lord through the agency of Brahma, all the great rishis again appear from different parts of the transcendental body, and Narada also appears. 1630. And so when I asked Bhanu Swami the question, you know, how does it happen that Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, he says, I think that in Brihad Bhagavatamrita from Maharloka, they go upwards to avoid the heat. But when night comes, everything is darkness and everyone sleeps in Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. That's his answer. Now, I've asked some other scholarly devotees and they may say something, you know, further on it. His responses come quickly and they're like sutras. Really cryptic. Very rarely does he elaborate at all. But he's very quick in answering. Okay.
Question from Radha Vallabha Prabhu. Lord's loving exchanges with cowherd boys depicts deep reciprocal loving relationships. As sadhakas, is it fine to assume that as lordships loves us deeply as well, although not visible due to conditioning?
Sure. Sure. And he doesn't interfere. Like, you know, supposing mother and father have many children, and one child amongst their many children is a little independent-minded, and they like to go off and do stuff and don't want to be bothered with stuff. So, you know, the parents don't feel less affection for the child. They're just honoring this child is like this, and that child is like that, and they're interacting according to the nature of the child. So as parents do like that, Krishna is like that. He doesn't interfere with our disposition and free will. And those that are more intimate towards him are more, he's more intimate towards them. Natural.
So, Lingaraja Prabhu continues, I am asking above question because as per Srimad Bhagavatam 1, first canto, 5th chapter, 29th verse, at the end of the millennium, when the personality of Godhead Lord Narayana lay down within the water of devastation, Brahma began to enter into him along with all creative elements and also entered through his breathing.
Well, that's, sounds like that's at the end of not just the day of Brahma, but the end of the life of Brahma. This is specifically saying at the end of the day, which is of such and such duration, and then what happens? Okay. That's it. Okay. You get the last word. Yeah, give her the microphone. You remember the question, right? Okay.
In the middle, you were saying,
you gotta hold the microphone near the speaking part of your body. Yeah, there you go.
When you were saying about Brahma, you said something about the kids in the cave, and when Brahma tricked Krishna, and I didn't get that part.
Did you understand what she said?
Saying that the devotees of Krishna were trapped in the cave, and then you said the Brahma tricked Krishna, and I didn't get that part.
Yeah. You say.
Yeah, she's asking Maharaj, you mentioned when Krishna's devotees are, you know, kidnapped, so she's asking Brahma tricked Krishna. What does it mean? She doesn't understand.
What does it mean that Krishna, that Brahma kidnapped the cowherd boys?
The kids in the cave, and then after that you said the Brahma tricked Krishna, something about that.
You got it? Did you got it?
I think I don't understand.
Do you understand?
Yeah, she's saying about that.
There's two things. First I said this, then I said that. So what are the two things? The big snake.
Yeah.
Enter the snake, and then they came out.
Yes, about that.
Okay, it's not the cave, it's the snake.
Yeah. I suppose Maharaj is asking that first they went in the cave, that was Agasura's mouth.
Yeah.
And then Lord Brahma hit them in the other cave.
Yes.
So probably she's getting
the. Okay, okay.
The cave.
Okay, let's go back. Chapter 13. You ready? Krishna was at the house of Nanda and Yashoda. And it was the early in the morning and they, all the cowherd boys, let's go. And Mother Yashoda's, you know, adjusting his dhoti and putting his peacock feather on and his nice garland. And you know how mothers do. So she was mothering and Krishna's looking at her and saying, it's time to go herd the cows, the calves. You got to go now. So finally Krishna left with all the cowherd boys. And they're off doing what they do. They play. And that's the first part of chapter 13. And then they're moving along. And one of the paths that they normally follow, they see this huge thing in the middle of the road. They look like a cave. It wasn't a cave. It was a big serpent. Because as they got closer, bad smell coming from the cave. And then they realized, wait a minute, that's not a cave. That's a big serpent lying in the road. Let's go inside and check it out. Thinking, you know, if there's any problem, Krishna will take care of it. So let's go. They're just playful little boys exploring. And then Krishna also later, he entered into the mouth of the serpent. Serpent closed his mouth. Got him. So what did Krishna do? He got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally, the serpent suffocated. He got so big. And he died. And the soul of the serpent went out the top of his head. The mouth opened. Out go the cowherd boys. Yay, Krishna did it again. Let's go have lunch. That was cave number one. And then Brahma saw the whole thing happen, went, wow. Who is this little boy anyway? Could look at him. He's over there. He's just having lunch with his friends and he just killed this gigantic serpent. How powerful is he anyways? I'm powerful. So let me match my power against his power and see what he's going to do. That was the wrong thing. But he did it. So then he went to another cave, a different place, not a serpent cave, but a cave. And he put the calves and the cowherd boys in the cave. He kidnapped them. Different place. Now is it clear? Okay.
Wait, so then they kept, Brahma kept them for 1 year?
Well, you know, time in Krishna's pastimes is a little mysterious. Because it's his pastime. So what happened was, while Brahma was away for just a short while, in Brahma's time, a whole year passed over here. You follow that one? Okay. So during that one whole year, Krishna had manifested forms of cowherd boys and calves. So the mothers thought, they felt love for their son like they feel love for Krishna. They were surprised. Because it was Krishna. It was not just love like Krishna. It was Krishna looking like their boys. He was reciprocating with them. They wanted to have Krishna as their son, so he became their son. But they didn't know it. But he was their son. That was the 1 year. That's on earth time. So meanwhile, the ones who were actually the cowherd boys, they were just sitting right there for 1 year, feeling like just half a moment or 5 moments passed. They lost track of time by the influence of Krishna's potency. So what do you think of that? Pretty amazing, huh? But Krishna's amazing. He can do things like that. And he did it.
Back after a year?
No, Brahma didn't do it. Krishna did it. He put them in the cave, and Krishna took them out of the cave and put them back.
Oh.
Oh.
Wait, how did he realize?
Well, he's mystical. He just went to the cave. He knew where they were. He hid them, but Krishna knows everything. You can't hide anything from Krishna.
Why didn't he just get the cowherd boys back the first
place? Why did he take them in the first place?
No, like, why didn't Krishna go back to the cave that day and get them?
Because he wanted to have some pastimes with the mothers and the cows.
Oh.
He wanted to, you know, have fun with them and satisfy their desire that, so he did, he's let a whole year pass. But meanwhile, during that whole 1 year that passed, the cowherd boys weren't like hanging out in the cave for one whole year. He brought them back. Because Krishna can expand himself. He can do whatever he wants to do. You and I can't do whatever we want to do. But Krishna can. So he took them out of the cave and put them back in the same sitting order where they were before with their lunch. And they felt like just a moment had passed. Hey, Krishna, we thought you'd be gone for 24 minutes to get these cows. You brought them back like so quickly. Nice going. Let's sit down and have lunch. Like nothing happened. That's Yogamaya. Sounds like fun, huh? Yeah. It's Krishna's fun. He's having fun with the elders. He's having fun with the cows. He's having fun with the bulls. Having fun with the boys. And he's teaching Brahma a lesson. And he's attracting our hearts. Like, hey, what's he doing there? he's unlimitedly powerful. Okay, it's 8:00. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.